Gary, what is Patriot mythology?
I can't say who coined the term. I don't know if anybody that I knew started using that term until I did, but I don't want to claim something I don't. But mythology is stories that may have a foundation in truth, but the stories tend to be exaggerations. And they are accepted by a number of people as being factual, though they are loosely based on truth. They are, for the most part, erroneous, completely in error. And they tend to be misleading. So in that respect, they begin to become disruptive, creating division, people debating issues that shouldn't be debated if we're trying to restore constitutional government. They're a detraction that just occupies time, and there is no place for them. We're beyond the age of mythology. We don't have Pegasus the flying horse anymore. We don't need Pegasus. We don't need Ulysses dealing with the Siren or the Cyclops or anything like that. So that's what patriot mythology is, and this is to, this conversation that you wanted to have is to go into depth in what patriot mythology is, and I think you suggested we have some examples, and we're going to go ahead and some of them are light, and some are more deeply ingrained in people's minds, and so let's go ahead.
Well, the other day I was reading a news article that more or less assumed that the U.S. Army gave ISIS wall tents.
Well, I saw the picture, and yes, they were military tents. So let's see, we've got a picture, and we've got some ISIS guys, and I think there was an ISIS flag in it as well. And then it says U.S. Or U.S. Army or something. I don't recall what it said on the tents, but definitely they're U.S. issued tents. There's no doubt about that. So we've got this picture that is a moment in time. Well, some people want to explain why that picture occurred. So they start creating a history around it. Well, not a detailed history, but a general history. Rather than go into detail and say, well, perhaps these were stolen from the Iraqi army, perhaps they were this or that, they want to assume that these were a direct, cut out the middleman, a direct contribution to ISIS by the United States government. That's the thing we want to say. Well, the United States government is behind ISIS. Well, realistically, they probably supported people in ISIS during the past, but I doubt that they gave them this these tents to make their life more comfortable. And so let's expound upon that. ISIS, according to news reports, has 1,500 Humvees. Did we give them the Humvees? No, we didn't give them the Humvees. They stole them from the Iraqi army, who fled when ISIS came into fighting distance. So why should we assume that we gave them the tents when they basically stole or conquered or captured the Humvees? Maybe they stole or conquered or captured the tents as well. But so to come out with that assertive pronouncement that the government gave them to them with no foundation behind it is patriot mythology. So what purpose does it serve? Division. And generally, I stay away from getting in those discussions because they are frivolous, without merit, and they do nothing to serve the cause that we're pursuing. Quite frankly, they're trying to create problems. There
Well,
are
there
enough problems on their own. The objective now is not to identify problems, because we've got more than we know what to do with. If you catalog the problems we have in this country, you could spend weeks or months listing them all. We need solutions, and we need to focus on solutions and take this patriot mythology and flush it down the toilet where it belongs. Get it out of the realm of consideration. Stop the disruption.
Well, something also that I was looking at recently, especially considering, the fears over Ebola coming here stateside, was a lot of guys in videos basically getting in front of their webcams and saying that there's a possibility that maybe the federal government will impose a quarantine and that this will somehow be martial law.
Well, I think some people have referred to it as medical martial law as well. But see, this is speculative. The government has set up both military and within the internal structure of the federal government, military type or armed units who will have the capacity to impose certain things. We don't know what. But to what extent? Is it this going to be martial law and you can't walk down the street or anything? Or is this going to be when they identify people that until they show that they have no signs of characteristics of Ebola, keep them in quarantine and then release them? Or are they going to go door to door and grab people and throw them, because they're enemies of the state, throw them in these medical quarantine facilities? We have no idea where we're going with this. Now, we can speculate of what it will be, but it's kind of hard to conceive that they're just going to go out and start grabbing people and throwing them in medical quarantine facilities. Quarantine is an absolute necessity. When I was a kid, we were quarantined with measles. My brother and I and my mother in our house. Oh, my mother, no, because she had had measles when she was younger, so she could go out, and apparently can't, I can't give it to her since she had it, and she can't carry it out. So she was allowed to leave, but my brother and I weren't. We've quarantined people coming into this country for centuries. And so quarantine makes sense because it's for the protection of a community. Smallpox was devastating in this country, and there were quarantines of a sort. There were isolations. I don't know if they called them quarantines or not. I've seen where they've isolated people with smallpox, but then doctors would go in and draw the pus out of their sores and then go back and inoculate people who hadn't had smallpox. The first smallpox vaccine was simply that. They got the pus out of the sores, they scraped the skin on somebody that didn't have it, and treated them. And after a few days, then apparently the immunity existed. So there's always methods to try and control disease. But at this point, we've got no more than five cases developing in this country. Actually, I can only find three, but perhaps there's a couple more that we don't know about, but that nurse Pham that was flying down from Wisconsin has been released now. She does not have the symptoms. So it's a scare, and people are compounding the scare, and they're bringing something in that is not even technically martial law, because if they use the military to enforce the law of the land, and there's a law in quarantining people, that's not martial law. Martial law, and I think we discussed this in a previous discussion, martial law is where you have a military governor. You lose the legislative capacity. The military governor is arbitrary and absolute, and that happened during Reconstruction in the South initially. So it's not martial law that people like to hang that scary sounding martial law on it. But if it's quarantine and applied from a practical standpoint, it's a good thing. If it becomes abusive, then I don't care what they call it. Then, as a friend of mine told me, they come to get my baby, I'm going to shoot them. And she's a liberal. So
Well, I mean,
that's
I re
patriot mythology, though, to create martial law out of something that. We don't know where they're going with it, only that they've put up a couple of task forces. And there is concern that if Ebola got out of hand in this country, we'd have to deal with it. But and they're not taking the right steps either. They're not stopping the flow of people from infected countries in Africa.
Well, I remember several years ago when there were concerns about these so-called coffins in Georgia. It became known as the Georgia coffins, and some people were concerned that it was going to be used in case of mass death that the government was going to be somehow involved in.
Well, actually, there were two things from back in the 90s. There were large vaults. I think there were concrete sections that were put in place and locked together, and they were fairly large. They were about 5 or 6 feet high. And then there were these coffin liners, and that's what you're talking about. Everybody says they're coffins. They're a weird shape for a coffin if you think about it. They're overly wide. They could get, a 600-pound man, just wedge him down in that. But, generally you try and conserve space. But there is a page, and I'll get you the link, that shows how these things work. People are assuming that they're just like, all these plastic things you buy at the store, that you put the bucket side up and you put the body in and then you put the lid on it. But in fact, what they are, and groundwater is a problem with cemeteries. The moisture level comes up during the rainy period, begins rotting the old pine boxes. A lot of the caskets are not sufficiently watertight, so moisture gets in, and that moisture causes decomposition, breeds bacteria, all kinds of things. I'm a surveyor, and we were surveying up in North Florida once, and I was walking across the cemetery, and I took a step, and my foot went down about 8 or 10 inches. They weren't 6 feet deep, 8 or 10 inches before I pulled it out, and we looked down in there, and we could see bones in there. So the coffin had rotted away because of the high groundwater. So these things are actually, the coffin is set on the what people think is the top of this, and then the bucket part is turned over, open end down, and put on there and secured. Now that air pressure then keeps the water level from rising, so it keeps the coffin above the water. Very practical. And ironically, is shaped properly. If we look at those buckets, they taper out if they're open side up. They taper out. Now it's hard to compact dirt under an outward sloping surface, but when you turn it over, now they taper in as they go up, which means you can compact the dirt on the sides of them and seal them and everything else. But it's more fun to create this scenario. There are, well, I think one of the pages showed a miscount by Alex Jones by thousands or tens of thousands of what would fit in a given area. But it's sensational to say FEMA's got these because they're going to kill us all and they're going to bury us in these Tupperware boxes. It's absurd. But why are we even going there? Is that a solution? Is it a threat? What the heck are we talking about that for? We need to restore constitutional government, not debate over what these are when, from a design standpoint, is very apparent what their use is. So that's patriot mythology. It wastes our time. Get rid of it.
Well, I mean, just a few more examples. I mean, I remember people, mentioning about like white United Nations vehicles or reports allegedly of like 6 million Chinese or perhaps Russian troops on the other side of the Mexican border.
Well, this goes back to the fax days, back in 93, 94 after Waco when I was traveling the country. And everybody had my fax number because it went out with my press releases or my articles at the time, before BE, BI, before internet. But there was all this talk. It was on, Patriot radio shows. 6 million Russian troops just south of the Mexican border waiting to invade us. Well, that's, a few years ago it was Russian, but then shortly after, a few years, maybe 5, 10 years ago, it was Russians. But then, hey, the Russians aren't after us anymore. They had the revolution and everything. So now it's Chinese troops south of the border. Now, a lot of patriot mythology, I just explained on the coffins that the shape of the coffin is not suitable for compaction unless you turn it the proper way, which is hole down. Let's look at 6,000 Russian or Chinese troops, or 6 million. Okay, that requires minimum of 6 million in Arizona in that desert in the summer. It would take more, but a minimum under any conditions would be 1 gallon of water per person per day. So that's 6 million gallons of water. That means they're going to have to dig a di very deep well and have a high capacity pump on it to get the water. Now let's look at some other things. Food. You got to feed 6 million people. That's 6 million meals 3 times a day, or 18 million meals. Now you just think about a meal. How many trucks it's going to take to transport 18 million meals a day into that structure or into that encampment area. Let's go one further. This is my favorite. We'll forget about urinating. We'll talk about defecating. Let's assume that the defecation is 1 square inch and 6 inches long. So two of those would be a foot long. Stack them up 12 times, so we've got 24 now. And that's 1 inch by 1 foot by 1 foot. And then that times 12. It's 24 because we've got two of them wide. So we've got 24 turds. Now we multiply that by 12 and we get 288 turds in a cubic foot. Now divide 288. Let me get my trusty little calculator out here. We have 6 million turds, and it takes, what do we say, we've got 24 times 288, so divided by 288 equals 20,833. So that would cover a half an acre of ground 1 foot deep. Almost a half an acre ground 1 foot deep every day in people defecating, getting rid of the waste food product. How do you dispose of that? That's a lot. 20,000 cubic feet of shit. So logistically, this is impossible. When you have a city, New York back in the 50s was 6 million people. Now, you're going to put a military operation up, and you're going to supply what was the equivalent of New York back in the 50s with food and water, and going to take care of all the waste from that out in the middle of the desert. The impracticality of that is phenomenal, but the one step further, you wouldn't need a drone or anything. An airplane flying from 50 or 100 miles away at 30,000 feet would probably see that massive amount of men. I mean, we can look at if each man occupies 2 square feet with his pack and himself on, that we'd have 12 million square feet. And 12, 1, 2, 3, divided 43, 5, 60. They would cover 275 acres. Now, that is probably, that's about 3/8 of a square mile. And I think that would show up. That's not counting trucks, tents, and other things. I'm just giving 2 feet by 2 feet, 4 square feet per person. And so it's impractical, but everybody wanted to believe that there were 6 million Russians and or Chinese troops across that border. Patriot mythology creates division. Some people are practical. They think it out. Hey, that can't work. Other people, no, I heard it. I heard it from, 20 or 30. And there's another thing about patriot mythology. The more you hear it, if you want to believe it, the more substance you give to the credibility of the story. So these stories have gotten phenomenal attention over the years without merit at all.
Well, I guess the last example I can think of was one that was, it was an article from InfoWars and was published about 4 years ago. This was back in 2010, where they were essentially describing what really amounted, their allegation was the existence of these supposedly secret post office torture rooms, or what were referred to in the article as, quote, criminal investigative units, end quote. Supposedly some source said that he offered some blueprints and some sort of PDF file and claimed that they're going to, like, separate families in these rooms. And usually I don't associate the USPS with torture.
Well, whether we do or not, you sent me those plans the other day, and I looked at them, and they're not a whole set of plans. They're just bits and pieces of plans, but based on the dimensions that are shown on the plan, the maximum capacity of the full height of that room was 4 feet by 4 feet, correct?
Yes.
Now we've got a declining stairway starting at the ceiling coming down to the ground. So probably 2 or 3 feet away from that, you start getting head high with the tread of the stairs coming down. That's if you leave bare stairs. Now, if you sheath that in, then it's going to cut out some of the airspace and make it even a smoother decline. But say 2 or 3 feet away. So we've got 7 feet from the back wall is the only stand-up occupiable space. Now, I would imagine if they were torturing somebody, there would be at least two people there, just one as a backup. So you've got two people in a 4 foot by 6 foot or 7 foot space. If they're going to move around, that's going to take all that space. But then they've got the torturee, and they've got to get him in a chair. Now, if they had little railroad tracks, they could put him in the chair out in the clear area and then slide him back under the stairways. But then they've only got one side of them facing him. Think it out. One side of them facing him. I don't know what torture they plan on inflicting, but he's back under the stairs where the ceiling has come down at the rate the stairs have come down. So you've got 4 by 7 feet for the two operating people, but at that point we're shoving this guy back into a little triangular wedge to give enough room for us to work on him. But we only have the front of him. Maybe we could get the sides, but 4 feet wide, his chair is going to be 2 feet wide. So that gives us only a foot on each side, and it's kind of hard to swing a billy club in 1 foot, get any velocity to it. So I think more than likely the post office probably stored equipment in there or something, but that was kind of that was when I saw that and looked it over and looked at the dimensions, it's absurd to think that they would do that. If we look at what they showed us, Saddam's torture chambers or medieval torture chambers or even the ones Britain used in the 1700s. They're large rooms. They have racks. They have all these devices in there for their various forms of torture. Even at Abu Ghraib, there was nobody ever put in something as small as 4 by 6 that I'm aware of. I mean, that's smaller than a jail cell. So impractical? Absolutely impractical. But hey, we'll get people's attention. Now, I don't know if that one will take off. I mean, somebody's obviously trying to get recognition for being an expert in torture chambers. I recognize him as a flaming idiot. But I think there's one more that we need to talk about. This one's been around for last 20 years as easily as well. And that's the white UN vehicles. As I remember seeing just a couple days ago, somebody's got an aerial shot of a large parking area that appeared to be in an airport. It was hard to tell, but it was a large parking area with nothing but white vans in it. And they said the vans had been outfitted with cages and tie downs and all kinds of sinister stuff. Well, how you can tell that from an aerial from a few hundred feet in the air and a black aerial from a few hundred feet in the air is beyond me. But they claimed they were UN vehicles, but I didn't see any UN on the side of them. But then when I went to the link that was given, this picture was taken in 2009, and the comments on it, the last comment was 2000, or I'm sorry, 2003. The picture was 1999, and 2003 was the last comment on it. So 11 years ago was the last comment on this site, but somebody runs across it and said, "Look at all those UN vehicles." Well, we don't see all, and there were hundreds of vehicles. Quite frankly, there were hundreds, but we don't see hundreds of UN vehicles driving around the country right now. So let's look at the UN vehicles. People have gotten pictures of trains with UN vehicles, a bunch of them, dozens, 2 dozen, traveling down the railroad tracks. And sometimes you'll see a convoy of two or three. Well, there's a point that it becomes practical to use rail rather than hire drivers and spend the gas to road transport these. So if they're not going too far, you might road transport them, but more than likely the manufacturer of those vehicles, or as in the case if these cages were put in those ones from 1999, the person that installs the cages, they're not going to build a garage big enough to hold hundreds of vehicles. Oh, let's back up a second. Commercial vehicles are always white unless they're special order. Just makes sense because people want to paint them their colors. the manufacturer of the truck, Dodge, Ford, any of those people, they've got maybe six or eight colors they use, maybe even a dozen. But if it doesn't match the exact color this company wants, the company doesn't want it. Let's take FedEx, for example. They use white vans, but they put their FedEx painting on it. Well, the manufacturer is not going to do it. The people that puts any racks in it is not going to do it. So FedEx has a contract with somebody. They might have multiple contracts around the country. So the white vans go to FedEx. They paint them their colors. White vans go to Sears. They paint, you know, their colors. White van goes to a company that has all their vehicles, say a royal blue. They get them painted locally. So all white vans are not UN. They're all commercial vehicles that were not special order. So now they've got to get from the manufacturer or the installer of special equipment, if they're going overseas, if it was a bulk purchase by the United Nations, now UN might contract, they got lots of money, they're not dealing with profit, so they might contract with the manufacturer of the vehicles or the person that installs any specialized equipment to contract them to write UN and certain things on the vehicles. So the UN ones, more logically, might be painted by the manufacturer because UN wants to buy the truck key ready, you know, put the key in, turn it, and drive it off. In fact, it's probably got a full tank of gas when it's shipped, unless it's going overseas, and then they'd empty the tanks for storage in the hold of a ship. So when you see the UN ones going, you know, if they like Ford vans, they're going to buy Ford vans. They're not going to get them in Germany. They got to get them here, and they got to get from the Ford plant that manufactures them to the port for shipping. So they put them on trains and ship them. Makes sense. It's not sinister. The reports of, I would guess in the 20 years, last 20 years, there's probably been reports and photographs of hundreds of thousands of UN vehicles. And you would think with hundreds of thousands, let's say just 100,000, well, that would be what? 2,000 for every state on an average. Now, do you see 2,000 UN vehicles driving around your state? I don't think I've ever seen one, and I used to travel quite a bit, and I've never seen a UN vehicle driving the road, so they must park them in garages and let them rot before they're going to use them. So this UN vehicle thing is equally absurd. It just doesn't make sense, but people want to make something out of it. I got one more example. They're back in, I was traveling around the country, and all this talk about, it was in Louisiana, and they gave the location, and they said all these used UN vehicles are parked there. Well, I called the company, and I talked to them, and they buy DX'd used UN vehicles that have met the criteria, been in an accident or something. They buy them and scavenge off of some and rebuild them, refurbish them, and then sell them to private interests, whoever wants to buy them. UN's got the money, they'll always buy new ones, but other people would love to get these for half of what their retail price is. So this company has a business of rebuilding these things, refurbishing them, putting new engines in them, and selling them. But they were talking about how sinister this place was. It's supposed to have a 6 or 8 foot fence with concertina wire leaning out all the way around this facility. And it was getting dark, and it was close to Christmas when we drove by there. And when we got to the location, I noticed that the fence went back about, there's scrub woods, not big, big, there are occasional big trees, but mostly it's scrub woods, 4 to 6 feet high. So you see this fence along the road, just like they described it. It goes back about probably 16 feet, two sections, 8 foot sections, and it stops. It ends right there. It doesn't go any further. Same was true on the other end. However, halfway down, almost across from where the gate ended this area was a house, and there was a Christmas tree lit up. It was, you know, getting dark, and the Christmas tree was lit up. And I couldn't help but laugh at the sinister implications that were put on that site and the Christmas tree across the street was just, you know, just it made it extremely humorous. But why people do these things is beyond me. I have no idea. There was another one about FEMA camps back then. There are not as many as now, but I have yet to see somebody get pictures of what can honestly be called a FEMA camp. The best I've seen is a place where they've put illegals that had entered illegally and were confined, but it was an apartment building with a fence around it. And I don't know, one of the comedians of alternate media was there and saying, look, they got the fence and they got this and they got that and they won't let us in. And, you know, just, but it wasn't a FEMA camp. It wasn't capable. I doubt that it had on-site cooking facilities. It might have, but it would not meet the criteria of a camp that needs so many facilities to operate. Look at Dachau or any of the concentration camps with a minimal. They had large mess halls because they had to feed hundreds of people a day, and they probably didn't feed them well, but they still had large mess halls. They had theaters in some of the camps. They had all these other facilities that were not just living quarters, and you need that. You know, you don't want your, even the Germans didn't want the Jews to be too uncomfortable in the camp. So, back in the 90s, I went by four, and a friend of mine went up to a fifth one. He got pictures of it. None of them are FEMA camps. One of them is supposed to be in west of Wickenburg, Arizona. In fact, right now, the city bought the land because there was an old World War II runway there. They made a second airport for Wickenburg, Arizona, and it's basically an industrial or commercial airport. So the private ones use the one in town, private aircraft, and some commercial. But they're trying to bring in commercial enterprise because they're only 60 miles from downtown Phoenix, and Phoenix Airport's getting heavy. So they decided that here's a good enterprise for the benefit of the city. We'll build the runway. They started building warehouses and selling these spaces to people that use commercial transport to transport goods and keep them out of having to go into Phoenix International. And they're probably closer to the UPS office in West Phoenix than that office is from the Phoenix International Airport. But none of these, another classic one is the Railroad Engine Repair Center in Indianapolis, Indiana. And Linda Thompson really got behind this one. And I was supposed to meet Linda Thompson for dinner one night. It had been arranged, trying to resolve some problems. We're waiting. She'd agreed to show up. We're waiting. She never shows up. But we were talking about it, and one of the bus boys heard us talking about it, and he walked over and he said, "You're talking about Linda Thompson, that lawyer?" "Yeah, we're talking about her." And he said, "Well, you know, I've seen that stuff she puts out, and she says where I work in the daytime is a FEMA camp. I work at that maintenance facility in the daytime." And we started talking about it. And so this guy works there, and they've never heard that they're going to be deposed to make a FEMA camp out of it. But when they came in and put the security fence around it, and they had turnstile gates because of theft, all of a sudden that made it a FEMA camp. And it was sensationalized all over the Patriot community back in the early and mid-90s. So those are Patriot mythologies. They have no foundation in truth, or maybe a slight foundation in truth. There was a maintenance facility there. It did have the 8-foot fence and the barbed wire above that. But that's the foundation of truth. The fallacy, 90% of the story, is that it's a FEMA camp and they're going to just herd people in there and force them into this maintenance building that's got turntables, train engines, enormous machines. You know, the lathes and grinders for a railroad locomotive are a little bit bigger than the home shop. In fact, probably bigger than most machine shops. So I just had to throw that last one in there.
It would seem then that Patriot mythology is mainly composed of a combination of disinformation as well as misinformation.
Yeah, but there's probably a foundation of truth. There is a border between us and Mexico, and it is possible you could get 6 million people there, but the impracticality. So, yes, there's always a foundation of truth. They wouldn't say that 6 million people on, Ellis Island. But sometimes the element of truth is so minuscule in relative to the whole story that there is an absurdity to it. But, yes, It is. It creates division. You know, if the government was created division in the Patriot community, they'd love to see stuff like this.
Right, because it gets people spinning their wheels and wasting time on things, whereas their energies could have been devoted to things that are more beneficial, especially with regards to restoring the Republic. Wouldn't you say, though, that if someone did want to look into these kind of matters, that they should learn about how to verify and debunk these kinds of stories?
Well, first be skeptical of the story at first. If it's true and will prove out, then it's true and will prove out. But be skeptical. Don't assume it's true from the beginning. That's the biggest problem because that lacks the thinking. If you've got one, I'll tell you what, I've been, I hate to use the term, myth busting for a long time. I don't like to go on public forums and do it, but if you want to contact me at outpostoffreedom.com, go to the webpage, outpostoffreedom.com, outpost-of-freedom.com. You'll find a mail link. Send your story to me. I'll take the time to respond. You know, I'm not going to go on public forums because those turn into massive debates and people pulling extraneous stuff in and they're pissing contests. Pretty soon they'll be attacking me, not for what I said, but because I said it. So, but privately, I'll be glad to respond to anybody that is curious, and I'll give my take on it, and it might help them investigate it. It might be something I've investigated, and I'll share the information I've found regarding it. So, but like I said, be skeptical until it's proven to be true.
Well, I guess this also kind of begs the key Bono question. I mean, whom do you think benefits from spreading these myths in the alternative media?
Well, there's well, who benefits? Let's leave the alternative media out. Let's stick to who benefits first. I can see three potential beneficiaries of this. One would be the government. We've talked about the disruption, the division, the waste of time pursuing something that doesn't even have anything at all to do with problem solving. It just is an argument over a problem that you're not going to solve. So there's FEMA camps. Is anybody in one yet? Maybe it would be a concern when people put in them if they exist. Next one to benefit, let's go to alternate media. Rush Limbaugh started out that way. He's got a little more sophisticated since then, but we've got Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. These guys are sensationalist, and most people, interestingly, are beginning to turn away from those two. There's still the InfoWar freaks like there were the Ditto heads. And I don't know what Beck calls his people, fat roly-polies. I have no idea. But these guys are making a living. They're both. Glenn Beck apparently is worth tens of millions of dollars that he's made by spewing this stuff, because sensationalism sells newspapers. Well, modern age, nobody buys newspapers, so it gets people to a site. And so you click a link and he gets 5 cents. The guy probably makes thousands of dollars. When he was on television, I'm sure he got paid handsomely for the commercial interest on that. I don't know if he's still on television or what. Alex Jones, he's not as far up the ladder, but I'm sure that guy has made millions of dollars in click ads or however, whatever he promotes. You know, I'm not sure what he promotes. I don't care what he promotes. I don't even go to his page. If I see something that says InfoWars, I'm going to wait until a reliable source gives it to me. The third one now, this is the most interesting one, and this is the most problematic. Now, I think we've talked about it before, but what I refer them to them as is guess what I know mentality. Now, a friend of mine, Randy Mack, calls them useful idiots. I'm going to stick to the politer term. They are people that like to get likes, let's put it that way, in the Facebook era. But whatever attention they get, whatever pats on the get back they get for exposing these flying saucers or these FEMA camps or these UN vehicles, oh, that's great. I'm glad you posted it. Everybody loves a pat on the back. And, you know, it used to be the pats on the back came in real life. They could actually pat your back. They met you and you've seen them shaking hands, perhaps, maybe even work together. But now pats on the backs come in the form of a thumbs up. And we like the appreciation for what we do. So these people do it for the sheer sake of their ego being gratified by getting as many likes as they can. Now, when they find out that a sensational story gets more likes than a less sensational story, they realize that promoting sensational stories is far better than supporting less sensational stories, because they get more thumbs up. So their ego is gratified by passing this information along. And they're the worst part of the problem, because they permeate the alternate media, the entire internet, emails, discussions, everything with this garbage.
Well, I guess that would kind of suggest then that another pernicious aspect of patriot mythology is that it blurs the line between news and entertainment.
Is there a difference between news and entertainment today? Oh, yeah, I was thinking of television, mainstream media. There's probably more realistic news. Let's see, was it this morning or was it yesterday, the shooting in Canada? That was yesterday, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Okay, yesterday morning I was watching the news when I was eating breakfast, and there was a shooting in Canada at the memorial and then in Parliament. And it was kind of interesting because I think it was CNN, and CNN's notorious for blowing things, and sometimes they even apologize, but most often not. But there have been multiple shootings. An apartment house reported shootings in their vicinity, and then one of the guys on there came on and said, that apartment house is right across from Parliament. Oh. But they still kept the line multiple shootings on the little banner at the bottom for a while. I guess that guy was having coffee, and he didn't change the multiple shootings because they heard the same shots that were going on in Parliament. But look at news today. How often is there news on? And when there is, the shooting, you know, all the stations are following these RCMP and all these Canadian law enforcement officers down the hallway. Every station's covering the live footage coming straight to you from Montreal, Quebec, wherever it was, down the hallway. That's news. That's big news. Nobody knows what happened, but it's big news. And so everybody's following it. That's entertainment, because they're sensationalizing. But they keep rewinding. You keep watching the same footage over and over. They got to have video, and they can't have the blondes with a leggy, big busted blondes on all the time. They got to show you something, file footage or anything that will give a little support, a little color to the program. So it's become entertainment. In fact, it was kind of interesting today on the news. I think it was on Fox. They were talking about the midterm elections going on right now. Well, there's no news coverage of it. Why is that? The speculation, quite simply, is probably true. The Democrats are in a losing position. They don't want Obama on television. They don't want to be associated with Obama. Therefore, according to a chart that they showed, right now we've got about 20% of the number of midterm ads on news stories on television that we did 8 years ago in midterms. Midterms every alternating 2 years, so every 4 years. So 8 years ago, there were five times as many news stories on the election as there is leading in this week just prior to the elections now, just over a week. So not only is it entertainment, it's a political tool. It's a means of influence. But, you know, if there's anything sensational about an actor, a singer, or anything like that, that's a top news story. That used to be relegated to filling in. When I was young, that was relegated to filling in if nothing happened in the world. Quite often in the morning, I tell my wife, I guess there was no news in the world today because they're covering that kind of garbage. When I was a kid, there was a lot of news around the world. And I guess the world's a better place. I don't know what made it that, but since there is no news about what's happening around the world, obviously we're in a better place than we were 30, 40, 50 years ago.
I doubt it.
But everything, even the back to the guess what I know mentality, that becomes a form of entertainment because, you know, it gets the applause. And that's what you give for a good performance. They get the applause, the thumbs up for posting entertainment, patriot mythology. So You can look around and get the news. I found a couple sources. One of them that I go to, I'm on their mail list. I must get 60 or 70 a day, and perhaps four or five of them. This is alternate media, patriot-oriented site. Out of all those that come to me, maybe four or five are really news of interest. Others are jokes, videos, maybe a song or something from the 60s. But as far as news, maybe four or five out of 60, 70, 80 a day. So there is no news today unless you go find it yourself or find a source that you're willing to weed through until you can find that very small percentage that is actually news. And then once you find the news, hey, Google and the search engines are great because I can put the subject in and hit search, and now I can start finding sources in other countries that begin to give me a true picture of the news. But I very seldom get it first shot. I have to go searching for it. The rest is entertainment. No other way to describe it.
Well, I understand that there are some specific myths that I know you'd like to get into.
Well, yes, there are.